night. No evil shall escape my sight.
Hogan, buddy. It's me, Deadpool.
I shot you.
Egg out, Theodore.
And Superman!
Hey, welcome everybody to Mint Condition Comic Collectors. My name is Sarah. We have Ivan.
Ivan.
And I'm Francisco. Jesus,
you're
wow,
Francisco,
sorry.
You're
Eric. Sorry, I'm already.
We have Ben. And Ben is going to introduce our special guest star today.
Yeah, yeah. Joining us this month, on this month's show, a man that is not only a comic book connoisseur, but a podcasting legend. He is known throughout the land by many names. Johnny Canada, Sherlock Megdal, Megalodon. He is the only man on earth who can use strategery to argue Bane into submission. Let's hear it for John from Torres vs. Zombies. Woo! What was that for a fucking intro? Nice.
Yeah, I don't know if I can live up to that intro.
I loved it.
That was a good one. That was good.
Very good. Very good.
Megalodon.
Megalodon.
So for those who do not know you, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm John. I do the Torres versus Zombies podcast that has been mentioned, and I read mostly DC stuff, but some indie stuff and a few Marvel titles, and that's about it.
Sweet, sweet. Well, we're really happy to have you on the show, and we're very excited about today's show, everyone. We're going to be reviewing...
My fellow Americans, the Soviet authorities released to the world secret government pictures of a costumed individual more effective than our hydrogen bomb. An alien Superman committed to communist ideals whose very existence threatens to alter our position as a world superpower forever.
Well, guys, we're going to be reviewing a group review of The Red Sun. It's a pretty awesome book. Let us know what you guys think. We all read it.
Yeah. Nice. It's all right. You're getting it. So we all read Red Sun, and it's an awesome book.
It's an Elseworlds book. It's what could have happened if Superman was found in Mother Russia instead of the USA. It was a great read. It's not canon, but it's a real good storyline. I mean, I've read this book God knows how many times, and every time I read it, it's just as good as the first time I read it.
Yeah, it's a Mark Millar book, so if you guys are Mark Millar fans, check it out. Yeah, Ben, start us off.
It's amazing.
There you go. That's
that's it. Show's over. That was the whole review.
It's great.
It is great. I heard you guys review it on the Fanny Pack of Justice, and I'd never heard of it, and I was like, that's a good idea. Like Superman in Russia, and it blew my mind. It's so good because it's not just Superman in Russia, it deals with like the politics of the era and stuff as well, and swaps a few things around. It's amazing.
Sweet.
Yeah, I really, really love this book. I had never read it before. I heard it reviewed again on the Fanny Pack of Justice. And I just in my head, I couldn't get around it. I thought, nah, I don't know. I mean, are they overreacting to this story? But when I finished reading it, it completely, my head exploded. I mean, it was just so great. Not to mention the fact that the art was really, really great. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
No, that was a great read. I definitely enjoyed it. The whole storyline is just, I mean, it takes place back in when Stalin was in power. So, I mean, it has some history to it, and it kind of diverses it, like from because imagine if Superman was from Mother Russia and was used as a superpower. I mean, the U.S. had no chance. I mean, no country would have a chance.
Yeah, let me read the back. What do they call it? The backflip.
The synopsis.
Yeah, it's a strange visitor from another world who can change the course of the mighty rivers. Ben Steele in his bare hands, and who, as the champion of the common worker, fights a never-ending battle for Stalin, socialism, and an international expansion of the Warsaw Pact. In this Elseworlds tale, a familiar rocket ship crash lands on Earth carrying an infant who will one day become the most powerful being on the planet. But his ship doesn't land in America. He is not raised in Smallville, Kansas. Instead, he makes his new home on a collective in the Soviet Union. Yeah, this book, I came across this book because I was looking through Eric's collection, and I was like, what's this? And he's like, dude, you have to read it. So I was like, okay, I'll take it home and read it. Sounds interesting. He kind of told me about what it was about. and I read it, and I couldn't put it down. It's pretty awesome. Yeah, so pretty much like Eric said, they reverse everything, you know, everything. Well, yeah, everything happens in the Soviet, and his costume is the same, but he has that, what is it called?
The sickle and hammer.
Yeah, and then what's cool though, my favorite part was Batman. Batman comes out in
The Russian Batman.
And I love his costume, and it's cool like how they get into his story when they shoot his parents, you know, and how, what was the dude's name? I forgot. The son. Oh, he was
Peter.
He was talking about how he looked into his kid's eyes, and he's like, "It will never leave me."
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I really like the fact that they really, really went into the description on how the Batman was created in Russia, and how I really like that it was really minimal what he had to work with, but he made it happen, and he did, you know, challenge the whole system. I really enjoyed
it. No, right. That's true. Because he was just a commoner. His parents were like rebels.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it wasn't like the Bruce Wayne here in America where he was like a millionaire and had all the resources to become Batman, where this guy, this boy, grew up to become the Russian Batman.
John, I saw you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
They could have just alternately called this book Ghetto Batman.
Yeah.
that's what it was. He was just, I mean, like, seeing the Batcave like it was, I mean, it was not the Batcave we're used to. It was just, it was like just all this trash everywhere, somewhere in a sewer. It was amazing to see that one panel where you see him in the Batcave, and it's just such an opposite to what you're used to with Batman. And to see that I think that spoke volumes about this guy's character.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I was going to mention was it speaks, like you said, volumes of the character, but also of like what we call coraje. It's a Spanish word to see kind of like his anger, his, you know, his energy, his will, his soul. I mean, I really fell in love with this Batman. I mean, I love Batman anyway, but this was just, I really loved it.
Yeah, I liked what they did with him. His costume was awesome. The hat, what do they call those hats? The furries?
Yeah, you those Russian hats that they have a little star on their forehead.
They added, like he said, his costume was like sewed together, yeah. So it wasn't like how you normally see it.
It wasn't the typical bat suit.
Right.
Yeah, it was kind of like Spider-Man in the Spider-Man movie when he went to go be a wrestler.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like a homemade costume. It's not a bad idea for a Halloween costume, by the way. I've never seen it done.
I'm on it.
There you go. Next, this year's Halloween costume.
All right.
Other characters that came out were Green Lantern also.
Yeah, Green Lantern. That was cool. I liked Lex Luthor in this book.
Uh-huh.
Because he was like the what do you call it? The genius, you know, and it was just, he was constantly, it was kind of the reverse role where he was not a villain, but he just, his job was to find a way to destroy Superman. So the U.S. would have stand a chance.
I really like how cocky he was.
Yeah, well, because he was the smartest man in the
world.
In the
world, yeah.
And I like how they built, how he made Bizarro, the U.S. He had the U.S. symbol.
Yeah.
That was pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool because remember when they launched the missile on the at the city?
Mm-hmm.
And then the U.S. Bizarro had, I guess, some little remnants of Superman.
Right, of course.
Of him being like all...
Like
you
know, protect the
protective people. Protective people.
Mm-hmm.
And he stopped fighting Superman and just went and sacrificed himself to save the people, which was, I think, was kind of awesome because, you know, Superman wasn't really bad in this book. He was just taught differently.
I think his heart was in
the
a good
right place,
yeah. But his direction was completely
right.
Out there.
And in the end, I mean, you know,
oh,
just,
the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of get to see Lex Luthor in a really different light, though, in this book, because you see that he's not, even in the regular Superman universe, he's not so much as a bad guy as he is. He just really wants to defeat Superman and prove that he is the man. He's the most intelligent man in the world. Because, I mean, the strategy he takes, like throwing a missile at his own country to draw out Superman, that's, I mean, that's a Lex Luthor tactic like you would see in the regular universe. But in this case, it makes him appear more like a good guy.
Right.
Yeah, because I mean, what is it? The ultimate what did the means justify what he did? And it did, because in his mind, he wanted to get Superman. It didn't matter, you
right.
know, how
well,
many
well,
eggs he had to break.
Well, he took that gamble with shooting a missile at Metropolis.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, that was he knew. But, you know, then again, it was like, it was pretty bad gamble. I mean, not a bad gamble, but it's just like, wow, he would go to that extent. And like John said, you know, that is Lex Luthor-ish. But it was not done the way he would have done it as a villain, but more as a humanitarian, an American.
Right, right. So, Ben, what did you think?
As I said, I just, because literally when I first, this is the first Superman comic I've read in years. So everything was kind of new to me. So I read it once and then read some other Superman stuff and then went back to it. And a lot of it made sense, like, you know, the Bizarro and all that kind of stuff. Because before that, I was like, who the fuck is this? I didn't know who it was. And so, yeah, it just didn't make any sense. But I just think it's so clever. It's so clever the way, you know, at the end, Lex Luthor can make Superman commit suicide and just by talking to him. And it's just crazy. It's just crazy good. Mark Miller's a genius, in my opinion, after writing this. Oh, absolute genius.
In what you were saying about with he could just beat him with a sentence. And when I read that, and I just, because of these writers, I thought their power is their words, their written word. And I think it really shined a light and kind of a beacon to have this one sentence drive Superman to suicide, sort of.
Yeah, it was, well, yeah, sort of, right. I mean, you have to read the book, and it's a really good read. Again, I can't say it enough. I mean, when I first introduced it to Ivan, because he's not a Superman fan, and I'm Superman, Batman, I'm every fan. I mean, you can see my books; I have all of them. And I told him when we got back together, like, talking again, I was like, you have to read this book. You have to. It's just that good. And after he read it,
well, after I read this one, I've been reading more Superman.
Exactly.
Really?
I've opened the doors to Superman.
Eric gave me a stack.
I've done the same thing. I've started reading more Superman.
Eric gave me a stack. He's like, here, you gotta read all these. And a lot of them were Superman. So I'm like, okay, I gotta read Superman.
And I mean, I really, 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 really like the unrequited love between Superman and Wonder Woman. I just really loved how she was broken.
She was down. She was down for her man. I mean,
she was so down.
I was like, shit.
But then in the, you know, yeah, no,
I really feel bad. I really feel bad for her.
I really felt awful for her.
Another thing about Batman in this thing was kind of cool is that the dude was really super intelligent. Like, he really did his homework on Superman and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking to myself, damn, what did this guy do? I mean, you know, they didn't get too deep into that story, and I wish they kind of did. And I'm hoping maybe Mark Millar would one day say, let me do a Batman, you know, a Soviet Batman story. Like, see how he became the Batman. Because it kind of...
That'd be pretty cool. And it, like, ties in. Yeah, I think that'd be great. In and out, you know, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Exactly. I mean, I would definitely read that. And I think Mark Millar would do a great job just doing that.
I liked how the artist drew out all the superheroes in this book. Like, I liked... I mean, Superman's suit is kind of the same. But I liked how he did Batman's and how he did... how Jordan, well, the Green Lanterns, they look like aviators, you know, they're American aviators. Yeah. And Wonder Woman, and who else was in there?
Yeah, they have like those dark gray tones, like red and gray. It's not your typical, you know, the Superman American symbol, like yellow, bright yellow, green, and blue. I mean, it's, green, bright blue, red, and yellow. Yeah, it was good.
I think the whole execution of this book was incredible. I really enjoyed it when I... Because it takes some time for me to, like, be able to sit down and read. When I sat down and read it, I couldn't put it down. I ended up going to sleep, like, I don't know, midnight.
Batman cough.
I think one of my favorite parts about the book is the way they highlighted Superman in his regular universe. You know, he has to show a lot of restraint. You know, that's a pretty common theme. But, like, in this book, with, like, under the communist system, he kind of felt like it was his responsibility to go out there and take care of everyone.
Right.
You know, kind of like the communist system does. And that kind of led him to go overboard with it and to get involved in every aspect of people's lives. And not showing that restraint like Superman in the regular universe does really, really shows a difference there. And I really like that.
Basically, it drives him crazy, doesn't it? Because he starts getting bored.
Yeah.
He actually says, "Oh yeah, I'm just bored of conversation at this point."
Isn't there a part where he comes over to the U.S. right, and everybody starts getting freaked out or something like that? Is there?
They think he's coming to attack, but he's just like,
and he ends up saving. Doesn't he end up saving like somebody?
Yeah, because he's still a moral person. That's the thing. Yeah. It's just a question of how far does that morality take you in taking care of people? Like, do you take their individuality away so that you can take care of them? And that's I think that's the major question of the book. And I think that's what, yeah, that's why Superman ends up kind of going crazy towards the end there.
What I really, really like about this is that you see that everybody has good intentions, but they obviously do something absolutely wrong because everybody ends up hating them. Like Superman, I mean, he has good intentions. He has a good heart. And somehow he just does everything really. I mean, he just takes it to the next level and then everybody just starts hating him, even though they're better off.
Oh, that's true. Another thing about it was because, you know, he had those communist ideals, but I mean, it kind of made sense because everywhere he touched was in order. Like, there was no crime, there was no murder, and it was America was the only one that didn't. America and someone else didn't take his help.
Chile,
yeah, Chile, and they were like the slums, and they were just being what's that word? Stubborn. Like,
right.
We're not gonna go by their ideals, by the communists.
We're free.
And, but yet apparently it's like a shithole anyway.
Right.
And it's that part that Evan was talking about where they thought that he was coming to hurt them, but he was really saving them. His goodness had no boundaries. Even though he was Russian, he kept saving anybody. Like, that was his ideal. If I could save everybody, I'll save them, no matter if they're, you know, if they're American, if they're Chinese, you know, he'll do it.
Right.
Which was kind of cool. But then again, you know, the communist ideal has no free will. You know what I mean? So that's why Superman gets bored. And I mean, it just shows how complete control sometimes will not work.
When you look at the panels where Batman comes out, doesn't it look like he's been drinking too much vodka?
That's the whole time.
Well, he has to. It's really cold over there, right?
Yeah, exactly. And plus, the Russian, man, they drink that shit like water.
That's true.
Yeah, they do.
What was I going to say? I was... did you guys see the Brainiac thing coming at all?
Yeah, yeah.
I did see that coming, but the end still. I'm still about the end. Yeah, the end not, just yeah, blew
I won't,
my
I won't
mind.
Spoil the end for the listeners, man. I mean, you.
I want to.
I definitely recommend it to anybody. And if you have it on your shelf and haven't read it in a while, pick that book back up and read it again.
It's gonna blow your mind again.
Oh yeah, I was so pissed because I ordered it on Amazon, and it's like I ordered it like 3 weeks ago or something, and it still hasn't gotten here.
Hey man, I told
you. So I saw like it's not gonna get here till like the 15th or something. I was like, no, I wanted to reread it again. You know,
I had to borrow mine.
Yeah. I was like, let me see your book.
I'll bring it in Saturday.
So any closing statements on the book?
Just quickly, when you were reading this, were you doing the accents?
Yes. I was trying to picture. Okay, look, see, every time I read these books, I always go based on like Kevin Conroy's Batman, and I try to like tweak it up a bit to see how he would sound.
Kevin Conroy with a little Mexican accent,
little Russian accent.
Let's say you're Russian. Come on.
No,
he can only do it in his head.
I can only do it in my head. I can never do it outside.
Oh, come on, man! No. Like you said you were doing the voices. I want to hear.
Wasn't
Batman,
doing so... the, I was doing the voices in my head.
Okay, I'm gonna find a Batman thing, and you're gonna say you are joking. Of course, go on in Russian.
Oh, if I'm joking?
No. One of the Batman lines.
Yeah, it's a Batman line. You are joking, of course. Go on.
It's like the Yoda thing all over again.
I know, right? There he goes. Oh, let's see. You are joking.
It works.
I can't do my voice like Kevin Conroy's, man. It's just so... Dars. It tries to come out, but it's not coming out the way I wanted it to sound.
Just do the movie Batman voice. Not wearing hockey pads.
Wearing hockey pads. Duh. You are joking.
Comrade.
Because there's one line in this I thought was amazing when Superman had just kicked the shit out of the Green Lanterns. You see Hal Jordan go... Think fresh pictures, think fresh. And then it's just a panel of Superman with the ring in his hand. And he's like, a thought-based weapon against someone who can move 10 times the speed of thought? Not too smart, Colonel Jordan. So cool. Dude. And I was doing the voice in my head as well, but it was amazing.
Well, you could do an American voice. Like,
I put on my Batman costume, my Superman costume. I was acting the shit out. I was like, girlfriend, get the Wonder Woman suit.
Put it on. Let's reenact.
Lois Lane, Wonder Woman.
We're reenacting the whole book right now. Let's do it.
Let's just do it.
That's not a bad idea. That's pretty cool though. Nah, I know. I've pictured the voices in my. I mean, I hear the voices in my head, and it's I mean, that's what I do now with all the comic books. Like Joker. Now, every time I read Joker in any book, I always picture Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill.
Mm. I can't picture anybody else.
Yeah, that's the same way I feel about the Joker's voice. It's all Mark Hamill.
So for Green Lantern, then, do you picture what the fuck's his name? Ryan Reynolds?
Hell no. Fuck that film. Fuck that movie.
So what? Yeah. What's wrong with that film?
Everything.
Everything's wrong with
man.
It.
Where do you want me to start, really? Man?
Oh god.
Do you have do you have 12 hours?
Oh my god.
Because I could break it down for you right now and everything and be like.
Is it really that bad?
Yeah. Yes.
I wanted to like that movie so bad.
So did I, man.
It's not good.
Yeah, being a Green Lantern fan, I mean, I was like, I was going at it in all different ways. Like, you know what? Don't get my hopes up. Don't get my hopes up. And I did. I went with low expectations. Fucking. Thank God
Maybe
I did.
That's why
I
didn't like it.
No, but
you're actually a fan of it.
No, but thank God I did look at it with mild expectations because I didn't think they were gonna do good, but they didn't. Like it was just like wow, they fucked it all up. Parallax, the whole how Jordan, it was like they had like a sissy Jordan, you know. He seemed so broken. Where in the beginning of any Green Lantern origin book, dude was like cocky, he was headstrong, you know, he was confident, and in this one he's just like you know, I can't do this, or I can't take this responsibility, and I'm like, oh fuck you.
You were saying it moved too fast, right?
It did, man. Come on, man.
I missed the best part of the movie, probably.
Oh, the ending?
Yeah, the ending.
I won't spoil it for Ben if Ben hasn't seen it.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I've seen it, yeah.
Oh, you've seen it? Yeah, have you seen the post credits after the end?
No, what happens at the end?
Oh my god.
That's what I missed. I was like, oh my god.
John, have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
You see the end of the credits?
Yeah.
You see Sinestro put on the yellow ring. And his whole suit turns yellow with the fear symbol.
Right.
I was like, whoa.
And that's how it ends.
What the hell was the movie even about? I don't even remember what happens.
Parallax. Apparently there was one.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, he invades, what's his face?
Yeah, the big-headed dude. I forgot what his name
was. Yeah, big-headed dude. It was terrible.
Hammond.
Yeah.
He was one of the lesser Green Lantern villains, and I was like, "Wow, you guys went with that dude, and you guys went with the big villain that shouldn't even have been out in the first movie. They could have waited till like the if they were to make a trilogy, they should have waited till the third movie."
Which villain would you have gone with?
Yeah,
which Green Lantern villain?
That's a good point. I mean, but Hammond, I don't.
No, yeah. he's not the right one for the first movie. I agree. I'm just curious.
Nah, that's true, though.
You're like, they should have just made Blackest Night.
They should have just started with Blackest Night. Exactly. They should just, bam, there you go. All the lantern colors, bam, that's it. Now, to be honest, I think it should have just been strictly an origin story, like a cop beat movie where he's learning the ropes and taking out, like, not minor villains in the book and then lead it towards, like, Sinestro kind of being the villain at the end, but then
yeah,
just
maybe have him discover Sinestro's planet and what's actually going on there.
Exactly, and then kind of end it with them going toe to toe, and then Sinestro just kind of flies off, and then it's over.
It ends like Green Lantern meets Training Day.
Exactly.
It ends with that last Rocky scene with Rocky and what's his name, Apollo, are about to punch.
Oh, and they're over.
That's a Green Lantern and Sinestro. They're like, whoosh. And then part
the
two coming soon.
Yeah. Well, I didn't like the fact that they made him so human, I guess.
Pussified?
Yeah, thank you. Okay.
Sorry.
That was it.
Sorry, but that was
it. He makes a good Deadpool, a bad Green Lantern.
Exactly. Deadpool?
Yeah.
He's definitely Deadpool.
I didn't even
like Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man. Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool, but not not a Green Lantern.
Where'd you go on that one?
No, I'm just saying because you could.
No, because you totally went to like Iron Man.
I know.
Like,
well, I'm just saying. Well, because Robert RDJ is.
He's a perfect Iron Man.
Exactly.
Too, yeah,
that's what I mean. So, like, Ryan Reynolds is a perfect Deadpool.
When they put him, though, weren't they going to make a Deadpool movie?
They were, but then they decided.
They still might. It's.
But I didn't like the Deadpool look, though, that they had with Weapon X and the.
Yeah, see,
X-Men.
But I don't think they're going to go that look, which was.
No, they completely screwed up his story.
Exactly.
And,
that whole movie, too, was. That movie, too, is a complete mess.
Well, I think they're just trying to feed this to the masses, and they just want to.
Well, they fed it wrong.
Well, it's because I heard.
Yeah, that's the thing. People love Deadpool. Why would you feed him this other story where he doesn't even talk?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make sense.
It does not make
sense. Well, it's like, I think it's like how Kevin Smith said that the movies, they make them for like everybody to see. You know, it's like, so like the Deadpool is like nobody kind of, if you're just watching movies and you're like, oh, X-Men, like who's this guy? Deadpool? Oh, that's how he started. Okay, that's cool. You know, because people don't, a lot, if you're not a comic book fan, you don't know how his origin started. Just like how we would have said that in the end of the Batman movie, well, the last one, Batman Rises,
mm-hmm.
right?
Dark Knight Rises. Dark Knight Rises.
If instead he would have said, like when she said, oh, your name is, use your real name, it's Robin, right? Wouldn't it be cool, like how I said, or, you know, yeah. Like he said that, it would have been like, oh, why don't you use your real name, Terry McGinnis? Wouldn't that have been better?
Or something. Or they could have gone Dick Grayson, Richard Grayson, or Tim Drake, or they could have gone, or...
Yeah, he probably would have fit Tim Drake best of all.
Yeah, or it could have been, what's his name, the other one, the Red Hood,
Jason Todd.
Any of them. I mean, any of them, I don't care. But give me a Robin name. Don't give me this my name is Robin. Who names your boy Robin?
I know a girl named Robin.
No, I know a girl's named Robin, but I don't see a boy named Robin. Robin, no.
See, when I saw that, I automatically thought, okay, he is Robin, so his superhero title is going to be Nightwing.
Right.
He's going to take all the Batman stuff and adapt it, so it's like Robin becoming Nightwing. That's the way I viewed that scene.
That's the way that's what helped you sleep at night?
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. Whatever helps you sleep at night.
I know, right? It's like, for me, it was like, oh, well.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it wasn't a, you know, because they're kind of trying to go ultra-realistic in those Batman movies.
Yeah.
So it's like, I was thinking maybe, because we all know Robin becomes, you know, Nightwing, so maybe, I don't know. That was my thought process.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, well, let's go on to our individual reviews. Let's start with our very special guest, John.
Oh, we're starting with me? Okay.
Yeah.
I did Underwater Welder, which is written and done all by Jeff Lemire. I'm in love with Jeff Lemire right now. He does he did Sweet Tooth. He writes Animal Man. He writes Justice League Dark. And also, kind of semi-breaking news, he also did Green Arrow 17. So if you've been disappointed with that series so far, catch up now because it's like a new number one, so that's great.
Well, okay, yeah, I read the first the volume one of Green Arrow, and I wasn't excited.
Oh no, it was extremely disappointing. Mm-hmm. But his newest one, Green Arrow 17, is really good, and it kind of wipes the slate clean for Green Arrow. So that's just something else to run.
Oh, I'm glad you told us that. I'm looking forward to it now.
So now I got to pick up 17.
yeah. It's bound to get much better now that he's taken over. Underwater Welder, though, what it is, it's like a science fiction character study, kind of. There's an introduction written by the guy who co-created Lost, and he called it the most spectacular episode of The Twilight Zone that was never produced.
Wow.
And that's pretty much a perfect description of what this is.
It's a bold statement.
It really is, though. It's amazing. I mean, it's about this character, Jack. He's an underwater welder, of course. But he's just kind of a run-of-the-mill guy with a shitty life. Like, he's got this pregnant wife he's kind of uninterested in. His dad died a long time ago. He avoids his mom. He's got an English degree, but he's stuck in this other job in this crap town. And he's just kind of avoiding everything. He's just kind of isolating himself. And that's basically what the book is. It's finding out about Jack and having Jack kind of discover himself. It's very character driven, like I said. The interactions between him and the other characters are so realistic and vivid. Like, you could picture yourself sitting there having that same conversation, but it seems like every conversation he has is extremely powerful at the same time. I mean, like, it's something that's really going to make you emotional. It's really going to make you care about Jack and what happens to him. You know, about halfway through the book, you know, no matter what happens, no matter how it ends, it's going to affect you emotionally, and it absolutely does.
Wow. I really like these books that really grip you emotionally, so it'd be something I would love to check out. Is this like an ongoing series?
No, it's a one shot. I think it's about 100, 150 to 200 pages, somewhere around there. It's you know, standalone. You know, the art on the cover is amazing. That grabs you right away. But once you open it, the art's in black and white. It's kind of simple, but it kind of reminds me of, like, if you were to picture somebody who's just a master artist sitting in a diner and scribbling on a napkin, that's what every panel looks like. And it just, the art does a lot of heavy lifting. Like the first, I'd say 10 pages are all just art, but you know exactly what's going on the whole time. That's one of the common complaints I have with comic books is like, you know, okay, this is a mystery, but I'm still lost. I don't even know where the story is going. That doesn't happen at all in this book. You know exactly where it's going. Another thing I really like about it is his use of the sound words. You know how it's always like pow, plam, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
In this book, every sound word is kind of a motif, and you can follow along and you can see that sound word pop up again and again, and it brings up memories for Jack. So, I mean, everything he does, this book is just perfect. I mean, I don't know how to describe it any better. There's no superheroes or anything like that, but it's definitely twisted. It's definitely got a sci-fi bent to it if you're into that. But at the same time, it's just kind of run-of-the-mill stuff that you see every day. You know, those conversations are probably the most powerful thing in the book, just seeing him interact with these other characters.
Who did you say was the publisher?
I don't know who the publisher is, actually. Hold on.
let me go pick it up.
Well, you know, I just like to put it out there in case the listener's interested and wants to pick it up.
Not very interested. I like that
yeah, I know. Story. Yeah. I just like the fact that they summed it up in that Twilight Zone episode that was never made. I'm captured.
Those stories they capture you. So it being in a book, I think, makes it that much better.
When he told us about it, I looked it up online. I looked at the cover and like he was saying, it looks like the scribbles. Like if it was a professional artist, and I liked that, so I was like, oh, this is just by that cover, just because I like to draw and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I kind of do want to read this. Right. What is this about? And now hearing him talk about it, it's like
Top Shelf Productions.
Wow,
you gotta look that up.
Yeah, I've never heard
yeah, this is something that he took time away from doing his other comics like Sweet Tooth and stuff like that to go work on. It was kind of like a personal project of his, and you know he had help even from other writers like because he was working on Animal Man at the same time and doing the crossover with Swamp Thing, so like Scott Snyder like lent him some help and stuff like that. So I mean there's a lot of work that went into this book, and it shows. It's amazing.
Sweet.
Yeah, if it's anything like Sweet Tooth, man, that's a real good. I mean, Sweet Tooth was a good book too.
I really enjoyed it.
I skimmed right through that real quick because my sister was still reading it, and I was like, wow, this is really good. Yeah. And I didn't know there was more to it. I thought it was just a standalone book too. Mm-hmm. But it ended. I was like, oh shit, there's more. And there's like three more volumes. Like, oh shit, I gotta wait till you finish reading them I get a chance.
Nice,
definitely a good read, John. I gotta pick it up.
Yeah, the art fits perfectly too. Just like in Sweet Tooth, like when you. Like, that art is very different from what you typically see, but it fits perfectly with the story. Underwater Welder, same thing.
How about that picture that Sarah did of her Sweet Tooth impersonation?
That was so funny.
That's amazing. You got to get the flannel, though.
Yeah, no, I'm going to do that. That's my next little project. I'm posted on the website. On the Facebook
You should wear
page.
That at the con.
Dude, that'd be Oh, yeah, that'd be you cool wear to wear at the con.
Yeah, there'll probably be like a handful of people that'll know who you
they'll
are.
They'll probably know, yeah.
You should wear it for Halloween. Do it for Halloween. I'll dress up as the Russian Batman. You'll be the Russian. Eric will be the Russian Green Lantern.
Oh, that's not bad. I need an aviator costume then.
Nice. Well, thank you very much for presenting that book. I'm definitely intrigued. Definitely.
If you get Sarah intrigued, you did a good job.
Nice. So who's next?
Oh,
Eric.
I'll go. Okay, here you go. I'm gonna do my review. On Robert Kirkman's other hit book, you know, he did The Walking Dead. This one's called Invincible. It's been out for years. This storyline has been out since 2002 and it's still ongoing. I'm going to review and I'm going to give you a little synopsis of the book. Well, the story. Mark Grayson is just like most everyone else his age. He's a senior at a normal American high school. He has a crappy part-time job after school and on weekends. He likes girls quite a bit, but doesn't quite understand them. He enjoys hanging out with his friends and sleeping late on Saturdays. The only difference between Mark and everyone else is that his father is the most powerful superhero on the planet as of late. He seems to be inheriting his father's powers. Now, it's kind of cool because you start off the book where Mark is just your typical American teenager. And he knows he's going to get powers, but they just haven't kicked in yet. And then they introduce his father, Omni-Man, who's kind of like the Superman of this universe. You know, he has every power. He's invincible, dudes, you know. And him and his mom are having a conversation. It's funny how him and his mom are having a conversation at the table, like for breakfast. And the wife is saying, I wonder where your father is. And then, Mark's sitting there eating his breakfast and he's looking at the TV and you see Omni-Man fighting in China against this dragon thing. And then he's like, oh, well, there you know. There he is. Now you know where he is. And then he just swoops down real quick to have breakfast, like out of nowhere.
Nice.
Then it's just pretty cool. And then eventually he finally gets his powers. And the way he finds out is pretty funny because he's throwing out the trash from his job. He works like at this restaurant, like a fast food chain, and he's throwing out the bag in the garbage disposal, and then he throws it just normally like he would, and it gets launched up like into orbit, and he's just like about damn time. So you know he tells his dad like, oh dad, I got my powers, you know. He's like, oh finally, about time, now you can fight crime with me. And he works for like this secret organization, like of heroes, like a Justice League kind of thing. And they're trying to give him like these costumes and stuff. And it kind of reminds me again like Spider-Man, like a real cheap imitation, homemade costume. All he wore was like glasses with a cowboy what do you call it, bandana over his face. You know, they put him over the mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's just fighting crime and shit. And then his dad gives him like a speech, like, now I could tell you where I'm really from.
With great powers comes great
responsibility. Well, kind of like that, but it's weird because eventually he talks about like he's from a planet billions of light years away called
Oa
Viltrum, and that these guys are like a peacekeeping group of superheroes. Like they mature of age and they get taught that they have to go to different planets to inherit. Like, perfect example, how would it be? There really isn't anything like that. But they literally send their children, well, not their children, their men and women to different planets and to populate them and teach them their ways. Like, they're like the humanitarians of the universe.
Mm.
And it's pretty cool, but then it goes in a whole different direction. And ongoingly in the series, it just goes from bad to worse, and then the truth finally comes out. I'm not going to ruin it for anybody because it's a long book. There's about, I think, 14 volumes.
Wow.
And yeah, I think there's about 100. I think they're on issue 100.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Just passed it.
Yeah, because I think Kirkman came out with this right after Walking Dead, and Walking Dead is already past their 100th issue. Mm. But, you know, Kirkman, again, does not disappoint with this book. It's really good. I definitely recommend it to anybody. It's not a coming of age kind of book, but it's just really funny. And it does get real bad, and it's very graphic too. It's graphic. Like, I mean, you know, you got heads coming off, arms getting pulled off. You know, it's Kirkman doesn't pull his punches on this one. So
who's the publisher?
Image.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, same one who does Walking Dead.
Sweet.
Yeah, and so pick up the first one. The first volume is called Family Matters. You can also pick up they actually condensed like 50 issues into one volume. I forgot what that was called, like the Ultimatum or like some. I gotta look it up, but I'll post it on the Facebook page. You could, instead of buying one volume at a time, you can just buy that one book and save you the trouble of buying five volumes, where you can just get it in one.
I heard they're doing that a lot now.
Yeah, well, you know, it helps. They do it with The Walking Dead. They have a book I saw at the Comic-Con last year where they had all 100 issues in one big-ass fucking book.
Right.
Holy shit.
It's like, goddamn. You know, you got it all there. It's like the Bible.
Right on.
But definitely worth the read, worth the pickup. Good story. You will not get disappointed.
Right on, right on. Thanks for that, Eric. Ben, what are you? What are you doing?
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen by Alan Moore.
Ooh.
So if you've seen the film, you know roughly all the characters and stuff in it. But the thing that I love about this comic more than anything else is it kind of appealed to my childhood. Because when I was a kid, I grew up loving like aliens and stuff. And I remember my dad gave me a book when I was about 9. And it was War of the Worlds. And can anyone tell me when that was written? Does anyone know when that was written? War of the Worlds?
1930s?
1898.
Oh shit! No way. Sorry.
Was it a book or was it a
War of the Worlds is a book.
No, but it was wasn't it like a radio televised show. Yeah.
That was 1938, I think. Oh, that was Orson Welles that did that.
That's why I got 1930s. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Oh, but it was written in 18.
I didn't know it was a book first.
Yeah.
Yeah. hang on.
I am dumbfounded.
Yeah, because it was written by the same guy that did 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, wasn't it?
World of the Worlds?
Time Machine.
Time Machine.
He wrote Time Machine, Invisible Man. Loads of cool stuff.
He was ahead of his time, man.
Totally.
He was ahead of his time back in the day.
I'm starting to think maybe he traveled back in time.
You never know. He was in the future the whole time.
Right.
It wouldn't have surprised me because the descriptions of like the aliens in War of the Worlds, they don't use any circular objects in their machinery. Mm-hmm. It's all like sliding parts.
Right. Oh man!
And it's just crazy. It's just a crazy read. But when I was given that when I was 9, it was really difficult to read because obviously being written in like 1898, it's old English, so it's really like the sentences are all really obscure. But
guys speak over there?
Old English.
Isn't that how you guys talk over there?
Sometimes we have a tendency to.
I was going to say, it's going to be hard for us to understand.
We have to dumb it down for you. Is that what you're saying?
I know, yeah, exactly.
Ben Morgan, yes.
There been a version, Americanized version? So that we can...
Yeah, it's all yees and yays and those and the. The thing is, though, that book is based where I used to live. And there's actually, when I was living there, like it actually has the name of the place I lived in the book. So that's why he gave it to me. I kind of had like two reasons to read it. So when I got into Alan Moore, the first book I bought was V for Vendetta. Then I bought Watchmen. But then I bought League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And it is basically a H.G. Wells comic book. That's what those books are.
Wow.
The first one is, I'm going to review the second one, but the first one was based in 1898. And at the end of the first one, they see the aliens from Mars sort of come to the Earth. They just see like a streak of green in the sky. And I put the years together and then that part, and I was like, the next one's going to be wicked. And the second one is War of the Worlds with the League, with those characters of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen in it. And the reason it's so cool is because the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen are employed to fight the aliens, to fight the Martians. And you know, you've got Nemo with the Nautilus, and the Nautilus is so good. Like, John, you've read, who else has read those? Anyone?
No, I
keep meaning to.
Yeah, I actually looked through one because we used to work at Diamond Comics at a Diamond distributor.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it there and I skimmed through it. And I also like the art. It's very not gritty, more, that's weird. I can't really explain it in words, but it's really something.
It's obscure kind of artwork.
Right, right.
The artist is Kevin O'Neill. But the thing is, you know, like I was saying to you earlier, everything in London is steampunk.
Right, yeah, that's what I got.
This is steampunk. Like the Nautilus in this is steampunk. Like it's a submarine that's basically a giant squid. But it's a machine.
Oh, nice.
And you know, in the first comic, you see Captain Nemo's got a fully automatic machine gun. But it fires like hooks. It's so incredible, and it's like gas powered and stuff. But the characters, like, you know, you've got Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, the Invisible Man, that's H.G. Wells. War of the Worlds is H.G. Wells. And also there's a reference to the island of Dr. Maru as well.
Nice.
Because they have to, which is another H.G. Wells book, they have to go and find, their employer tells them, the only way to beat these aliens, okay, who are attacking London at this point, is to go to this island, the island of Dr. Maru. And it's just like, it's in the... Go on.
Is this The Island of Dr. Moreau. Is that the movie?
Yeah.
No, well, it was based on a book.
Right, but that was a movie also, right?
Yeah,
right.
It was a movie too, yeah.
Yeah, Val Kilmer and...
To go with the
big mouth. So, I haven't seen that film. Was that film like they're making like people into like animals and shit?
Yeah, yeah.
I saw it when I was like 8th, was scared
the shit out of me. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was horrible, like it. To be honest, yeah. It wasn't that good.
I mean, even though Marlon Brando and...
Marlon Brando was Dr. Moreau.
Yeah.
There's an older version of the film, and it's actually better.
I gotta check that out.
Yeah,
I'm gonna make you into an animal. Listen to me. You're gonna be an animal. Possibly a cheetah. But I don't know. Where's my little monkey boy?
Why is Jarell talking about animals?
I know, right? Jarell?
That's the best you'll get out of me.
I'm making an offer. You can't resist.
Sorry, Ben. Go ahead. Sorry.
I don't think I need to anymore. No. Okay. So they get told that there's a biological weapon being made in the Island of Dr. Moreau. Okay, but it's not an island. It's just an island of trees in the middle of a field, and no one goes near them because everyone's really scared of what's in there. And you go in there. And when I was a kid, we had all like these childlike cartoons like Rupert the Bear and stuff like that on TV. And all the monsters in the woods are these childhood idols that I grew up with. They're all English, like really childlike characters. And they're all these giant fucking monsters that can't talk properly and they're ripping out of their clothes and they've got claws and massive fangs and shit. So they go to Dr. Moreau and he gives them a biological weapon that they then go and kill the aliens with. But there's like... there's inner conflict between the characters, like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. They're at conflict with the Invisible Man, who's a complete psycho in this, like the original character in the H.G. Wells original. He was a complete psycho, and he tries to make a deal with the Martians, and it just all kicks off. But the artwork's amazing, the story is amazing, and the cool thing about it is that it's not just set in the 1800s, it's actually written as if it was written in the 1800s. So throughout the book, you have like these really weird poster ads for like safari in Africa and shit, which was new at that point. And a really weird crossword game. And I'm just looking for it now. And at the end, when the comic finishes, there's these big stories that he's written. It looks like it's straight out of the 1800s. That's why it's so unique. It's not just a normal comic. Like, he's actually set the whole thing in that end of that era. It's amazing. It's really steampunk as well, which is always awesome.
I really like that when a writer, well, of course they all do this, but I really like it when you as a reader can notice how they've done their research on whatever time they are writing about. I really enjoy that because some people can they pick up on that and it's just a real good treat. It's like a little secret you and the writer know about.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's why it appealed to me, because as soon as I saw it was War of the Worlds, I was just like, you know, that was one of the first books I ever read. And to be into Alan Moore, to find Alan Moore and be, he's written a comic about the thing that I love probably the most. It's the best book I've ever read, I think. It was just the most amazing feeling to see it. It felt like luck at first, but absolutely amazing. Alan Moore's a genius.
What doesn't it feel like he's actually, like, you feel like you have this connection with the writer and like he's actually speaking just to you? And it's
I can't see any faults with it. Like there's little quirky bits in it that you just think, how the fuck does he think of this? Like there's a bit where, for instance, like, I won't spoil it for you, but there's a bit where the Invisible Man and Dr. Jekyll have a fight, okay? And the after effect of that blew my mind. And I can't spoil it for any of you. I just wish you could read it like now and then go, oh yeah, you're right, that was amazing. But
this is actually a book I've been wanting to go pick up.
Buying it on Amazon as we speak.
Right on.
Yeah, very good. It's absolutely amazing. I can't recommend it enough, and it's absolutely perfect. Everything about it, the artwork's amazing, the way it's got the steampunk feel, the dialogue. Alan Moore is really good at dialogue as well.
Did you mention who is the artist?
Yeah, Kevin O'Neill.
Okay.
Kevin O'Neill.
I'm not sure what his other work has been, but it even says on the back there's like a synopsis of the book, and then there's synopsis about the artist and the author.
And it says, you know, Alan Moore born in 1847 and all this kind of shit. It's just really
nice.
It's absolutely amazing.
Cool. Well, thank you. I'm very excited about reading that. Really, really excited. Thank you for bringing that to the table, Ben.
And now it's Ivan's turn.
Great. I have to follow Ben. Jesus.
I know, right? Jesus. Thank God I didn't have to follow him.
I just want to be last.
All right. Well, a lot of you have probably read this book. I did. It's a DC. It's called Kingdom Come, and it's an Elseworlds. And it pretty much involves like every superhero. Not every superhero, but the DC JLA and stuff like that. And you guys have read it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Ben, John, have you guys read this?
No, I have not.
What?
Oh.
Damn. John, you got to get on that.
I'm so
dude.
Sorry.
You guys got to get on that. No,
I didn't mean to offend you, right?
I'm offended.
Well, I thought if I'm any, leaving. I thought this if anybody over. Read it, I thought John would have read this. Okay, well, it's pretty... I loved it. First of all, it's by Mark Waid, and Alex Ross did the artwork, and I love Alex Ross's Alex artwork. Ross is... It's fucking awesome, and it's all the like the JLA, like all the A-listers, the superheroes. They're all old. They're all retired already. You know, Superman's back at his farm. He's farming. You know, Batman's old, and I guess this is like after would have been broken.
Well,
right?
No. It's just that his body is taking so much of a beating that now he has to wear this
robotic like armature.
Yeah, it's kind
of
like an exoskeleton to up like his. For his spine, like
yeah.
he can't walk without it. Like without it, he'd probably be like a paraplegic or something.
Right.
And you know what I love that Oliver Queen was hanging out with him, just like in the Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
And so I'm starting to see they're pretty good buddies there.
Well, because they're both human.
Yeah. And millionaires.
Oh no! Oh yeah.
And also, so it's when the book starts, the superheroes are all retired. And the world has now been overrun with metahumans, and they're out of control. They're fighting in the middle of the street. They're just destroying stuff. They're out of control, and pretty much Superman and regroups with the JLA. Most of the JLA, I don't want to give out too much, but most of the JLA, and they go into trying to control these metahumans that are out of control. And I don't even know what to say because I don't want to ruin anything.
It's just it's a real good read.
It's an awesome read, and just the back and forth, like with Bruce Wayne, how he partners up with Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor comes out in the book, and let me see. Oh, and I love what they did with Shazam.
Yeah,
Shazam, like his little
Captain Marvel.
His part was fucking awesome. That they took this character that's kind of, I mean, you don't really read about him too much. Well, at least we don't. And they took this character and they really brought him forward. And use them like he was a big part of the story.
So wait, was Shazam, was he like regular age now?
Yeah, he's regular age.
Yeah, he's
so he's like now. In his prime at this point.
Yeah, so when he says, but in the book he was being controlled by Lex Luthor, so he's like Lex Luthor's little monkey boy, does whatever he wants. And but yeah, it's funny because he doesn't turn back into a little kid. He just when he unshazams. He just looks like he does normally all the time, but without the
costume.
Without the costume.
So he could say Shazam as many times as he wants and use that as an attack form.
And the Spectre is all over this book. I love to watch the Spectre talk, or, you know, his mom.
The old man. What was his name?
Shit.
Who does the lettering? Because I really love the lettering on the Spectre. It really...
That's all Alex Ross.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he doesn't put in the words, but
he makes the effect.
Norman McKay.
Yeah.
The old man's Norman McKay.
Yeah, just a normal human, and he's being shown this future.
Because he's seeing visions.
Yeah.
He's seeing visions of what's going on, the Armageddon, and it's pretty much all these superheroes just battling it out. And so the Spectre's there. He's waiting for the judgment time to come. McCoy is his like human anchor, so he's taking him everywhere, you know, because he's like the human. What's his name? What did he say his name? Norman McKay.
Yeah, McKay.
He's like, why are you showing me all this? Like, what are you doing? Like, do something. And Spectre's like, you know, Spectre. He's like, I can't. He's like, I have to wait until
judgment time.
The shit goes down to judgment time, and then those responsible for everything will pay. And he's like, I'll take care of that.
He is vengeance.
Yeah, and I love the art, and one of my favorite panels in this book was Spectre's telling McKay about the humans, right? And he's like, but the two mightiest, the two that have always, you know, stood out are Superman and Batman. And there's a panel where Alex Ross, you know, he paints everything.
Mm-hmm.
He did the panel, but it was
straight from the comics. Straight from the... Oh, I'm just saying, sorry.
You want to review the book?
No, I'm just trying to help you, man. I'm trying to so you can find it.
I'm trying to find the thing.
Because you're...
Like, it's the first... you know the what is it, like Action Comics number one where Superman is holding the car and he's like smashing it against the side of the hill or something?
Mm-hmm.
And then more Batman... Detective Comics number 27 where Batman's swinging into action. He's holding the red hood, you know? And so he did that with his painting thing. That was awesome. That shot up to the top of my favorite panels list. And also... There's another area where Shazam is crying. And it just like, you could, if you look at the panel, let me find it. You could,
You should have put the post-its.
Yeah, I know. I didn't post it this time. You'll see it right here. It's like, it was so like awesome. I was like, damn, I can feel it. I can feel it, Shazam. I know what you've done. I know what you're going through. But yeah, if you guys like the, oh, and also there's a big old, you know, little surprise ending. Well, it probably won't be a surprise now. But yeah, if you guys like the JLA and the DC books, this is an Elseworlds. I really highly recommend you pick it up and read it.
John, Ben, pick it up, man.
Yeah, man, the art is astounding. I really, Alex Ross just, you know,
he captures the real essence of the hero, like as if the hero like Superman or Batman would look like in real life,
right?
Like he used real people to put on costumes, yeah. And he would draw them,
mm-hmm.
and paint them. Yeah, but his work is uncanny, man. I love his work.
It's sort of a Norman Rockwell feel.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I like how he did the Spectre. That was fucking awesome. When he showed up, I was like, whoa. Yeah, well, yeah, so that was my review. Kingdom Come. Check it out.
Yeah, that's a great book, guys. Pick that up. It's an excellent book. The artwork, like I said, is amazing, and the storyline's really, really captivating. So, it's my turn. All right, guys. Well, I'm reviewing the Kabuki Skin Deep. It's a trade paperback. It's actually number 4, volume number 4 in the series of Kabuki. This is written and the art is done by David Mack. I have had the pleasure of meeting Mr. David Mack, and he's an amazing guy, really humble. He'll talk to you. He's there in a booth at Comic-Con or any con, and he'll just talk to anybody, which is really great. The fact that he's accessible is just really nice. But this comic book is basically it's about Kabuki, who is a no operative, and she's gone rogue, and so everybody presumed that she was dead, but Control Corps came in. I'm a little nervous. Control Corps came and repaired her. They did a lot of surgery, and now they have her in this building, and they're trying to get into her mind and trying to reprogram her. And during this particular book, it's a very, I don't know how to explain this, but his art is really complex. He uses mixed media and photography and painting and sketching, and he's just really amazing. And the thing is with his, like, it's not even about the storyline in this book, it's about this journey you take with this character into her subconscious, into her past, and into her thought process. And I think this is what really grips you. It's not, the artwork functions with the words, and the way this book is done is the words aren't like, you know, left to right. They are they travel all over the page, down in a spiral, and they don't spoon feed any of the information to you. It's really quite complex, and it's very gripping.
How far is this book into the Kabuki story?
This is the 4th book. Yeah, so. And actually, Alex Ross did the introduction to this book, and Alex Ross did some of the cover pictures for the individual comics, and it was just astounding the way, I mean, what I've been thinking about the book while I read this is exactly, and this is just how I feel about it. I read the book, and then at the end, I read the intro, and the way Alex Ross describes it is exactly how you feel about the book. He says, One can feel the essence of his characters experienced so vividly because it is such a product of true passion. This guy, he just, the mixed media aspects, the drawings, the sketches, the watercolors, I mean, it's just really amazing. So Kabuki is in this room. She's there in kind of a solitary confinement, and she comes across these origami figures that are coming through her vent, but they don't come all the time, and they're made out of toilet paper. It's apparently this other operative that has been held in the next room. She writes these notes to her, and she becomes like her very only and first friend. And together, well, her name is Akemi, but Akemi doesn't receive any information from Kabuki. She just sends Kabuki these little notes, and Kabuki then reads these notes, and you can, of course, there's a lot of inner monologue, and you can sense how she's feeling and what these notes inspire her and how they're helping her cope with the solitude and having, you know, to kind of come to grips with where she is and what she's about to do. So at the beginning of the book, Kabuki's dead. She blows up, and then it goes into retrospect of the actual story, and it really doesn't give you anything about the actual storyline of the Kabuki line yet, only what the character is feeling and how, where she's coming from and how she is the way she is. So if you want to have your like eyes blown away by incredible artwork, I really recommend this.
If you want to read that, is it like, if we've never read Kabuki, can you start on that book, or do you recommend they start from the first one? Or,
well, the whole line is amazing, but you can start from this. At the beginning, right after Kabuki dies, it goes into kind of a little background on the actual the series, so it kind of brings you up to speed, so to speak.
All right, cool.
Sorry.
So the artwork you were talking about, the words, so are the words like really integrated with the artwork? Because I love that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, completely integrate with the artwork. I mean, there are some, like, I was, you know how you were saying how Alan Moore did this one thing, and then you also had grown up with it, and when you saw it, it kind of spoke to you, like
yeah,
you were in a deep conversation with the actual author. Well, that's how I feel with this David Mack book, because there's all these little notes on kind of scribbled in the artwork that when you find something, you're like, it's a little treasure.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's really good. And it's published by Image Comics. It's called Skin Deep. It's really, really small, but there's a lot of dialogue, inner monologue, and a lot of thoughts and stuff. It's really good. It's a strong female character.
Did you mention that David Mack also did a bit of Daredevil?
Yes, he does. He's doing the cover art of Daredevil right now. I think he's going to be writing a story with Brian Michael Bendis pretty soon.
I'd be pretty interesting to see. Is any of that artwork out for Daredevil?
Yeah, he's done a couple. He's done a couple. Yeah, double covers. Yeah.
I think about 10 covers, I'm pretty sure.
So. Yeah, his watercolor is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a good technique. I love it.
Yeah, actually, I've been pretty privileged to, when I went to go see him, he let me flip through the pages of his comic books, the actual page they used to mass produce the comic book. And that blew my mind. This artist is really ahead of his time. I mean, just, and the fact that he's so accessible is just great.
Cool.
Okay, well, you guys, today we are going to dissect a character.
Yeah, we're gonna break down the Spider-Man character. We're gonna dissect him, if you will. We're gonna see, what is he, who is he, and give me one more.
What could he be?
What can he become?
When is he? Where is he?
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there goes the Spider-Man.
Yes.
Yes, it's Spider-Man.
Okay, well, from what we know about Spider-Man, at least what I know, because I've never really picked up a Spider-Man comic book. His name is Peter Parker. He's from New York. Uncle Ben died. He got bit by a radioactive spider. He puts on the suit. He fights rhinoceros. He fights, I mean, rhinoceros. Rhino.
Rhino. You can tell he doesn't read the comic.
I just know whatever I see from the rhinoceros? From cartoons and the movies.
The octopus?
The octopus man. Yeah, so that's all I know. I kind of know like the top layer of the cake.
I mean, well, that in a nutshell is pretty much what all you need to know about him is, you know, I like how his morals kind of come into play a lot, and it's all because of Uncle Ben, because I see it now, because as a father, you know, you kind of have to go with that. How do you teach your kids to be good people, better people than you? Because, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that I have a rough upbringing, but coming from an old-fashioned, like, Mexican family, you know, they're really kind of brutal on you. They're like, they really don't. I don't know. It's just weird. I mean, for us, it's like we got hit, we got spanked, we got disciplined, and I think that made us a better person. So like in this instance, Uncle Ben, you know, took care of Peter and gave him that whole speech, that little speech where now it's every parent uses it. You know, with great power comes great responsibility.
We always use it.
Exactly, and that comes into play a lot with Spider-Man because you know he has this newfound power where he gets bitten by a spider. And he get, you know, what do you do with it? He's a young kid. He's a nerd who got picked on and has his ability. Now, most people who get picked on nowadays with that kind of power would probably go like fucking ape shit and kill people.
I would.
I know. It's like, man, could I fight crime for get, you know, no pay, risking my life for people I don't know? And because I have this power, do I really have to use it for good? But in all essence, it is kind of that way. You do have to kind of do it that way, because I mean, as like I said, as parents, we try to teach them those values and morals where hopefully it pays off, where they will teach their kids the same, and you know, they become good people, because you don't want to raise assholes. You don't right. want to raise kids that become nothing. I mean, well, you know, in a sense,
right? No, and that's actually very right on, Eric. And one of the things I've noticed is that most young kids nowadays, they're fit with the kids, with the little kids, the toddlers or whatever, they really pick Spider-Man as their favorite character. Later on, you get the Batman and the Superman. Exactly. But when they start off, it's all about Spider-Man.
Excelsior!
Because he's young, because he's learning, because he's going to school, because he gets picked on, because he has this like strong morality conflict sometimes, this inner monologue. I really like that he is smart and he has all these like really smart puns, but it's not like an asshole pun. It's more like, you know, kind of comedy that brings the comedy.
He's a spider with a mouth.
What do you guys think, Ben and John? What do you guys?
Spider-Man, because Spider-Man's like one of the most accessible characters. I mean, besides the fact that, you know, he's kind of one of the most famous Marvel characters, you know, we all have kind of a base knowledge of like who Green Goblin is, and I mean, you could just pick up a Spider-Man comic and start reading. But I mean, he's also accessible in that he's kind of a normal guy. Like he's like what you would picture just a normal guy with superpowers to be. He's just kind of making his way through the world. He's got girl problems, he's got, you know, work problems. He's really busy because he's a superhero, and you know, now he's like with the Avengers and the Fantastic Four, and he's got this other job as a scientist. He's got so much going on, but he's still just like good natured about it. It's so easy to like him.
Right.
Now, was there a point when there was a different Spider-Man? Was it Ben? Or no, not
that was
Ben.
Just, that was well, a clone.
There was the clone. Yeah.
Yeah. It was Ben Reilly.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it was Ben Reilly, wasn't it?
Yeah,
who has his own comic now?
Yeah, how'd that come about? Where'd this clone come from?
You're talking about years of like where they decided to start coming out with new sagas, and you got the clone saga.
His clone was created by the Jackal.
Yeah,
so he's the one that created him, and now there's been a whole thing with him for a while. Peter thought that he was actually the clone. And so he gave his clone the Spider-Man mantle.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then that kind of led to his clone becoming the Scarlet Spider, and now he's got his own book now, which the tagline for that one is like, all the power, none of the responsibility. Oh, okay. It's an okay book. I mean, I checked it out a little bit.
If the spider wasn't ready.
Is he the one that had those big web shooters?
Yeah, the bracelet web shooters that come out of it. They're outside of his costume. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks crap. No, I mean, it kind of real quick. It kind of reminds me of like the Batman when Bane broke his back, and then you had that other dude who stepped up as Batman, and he had that new costume with
the blonde guy,
the blonde dude. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it was like, nobody liked them. And I think DC and like Marvel, they decided, let's go a different route, which they always seem to do all the time. Like, let's try a new guy. And then what happens is that nobody likes the new guy.
Right.
And so they go right back to the normal. So Ben Reilly was like, we don't like him. We can't relate to him. Nobody can relate to him. He's a clone.
Are you guys reading the current Spider-Man comics?
No. I wanted to ask about that because there was a big deal with that issue that just came out. Was it number 700 or something like that?
Yeah, they ended The Amazing Spider-Man, which was issue 700.
Wow.
And in that last issue, how do I explain this easily? Doc Ock transferred his consciousness into Spider-Man's body and took over as Spider-Man.
Yeah, that was
what?
So, what? So the Superior Spider-Man, which is the new Spider-Man book, Doc Ock is Spider-Man, and Peter's kind of a ghost following him around.
Are you serious? What?
So I think it's really interesting. A lot of people are pissed off about it.
So you've read what's going on so far?
Yeah, yeah. I'm current on the books and. Okay. Yeah, a lot of people are angry, but I like it because I mean I figure eventually they're gonna bring Peter back as Spider-Man.
Of course.
But I'm liking this little thing because in a lot of ways Doc Ock is better at running Peter's life than Peter ever was.
well, that's the thing, you know. Of course he's gonna be better at it, but I mean Peter Parker is the likable guy, you know.
Yeah, I've read Spider-Man through a lot of different. Variations, like in Civil War, I liked his role in that, where he finally reveals himself to everybody who he is. Like, I'm Spider-Man is Peter Parker, and people didn't know that. They're like, what the hell? It was a big deal, and it was kind of cool because he was fighting on the wrong side for a time where he didn't know who was the right side, Cap or Iron Man. And
right,
Peter always comes out as like the John said, as like the humble, like hero.
Well, that's probably the only time I've read like Spider-Man was in Civil War.
Yeah,
when he was
now. Of course, they kind of erased all of that too.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing about comics; they're never continuous. I mean, now Marvel is a whole different route too, right? Like the New 52. Aren't they doing the Marvel Now, or what was that called?
Yeah, that's kind of what the Superior Spider-Man part is. But like even earlier than that, though, they had, I forget who the writer was, but he hated the fact that Spider-Man was married to Mary Jane. He didn't want Peter married to Mary Jane anymore. So they devised this way to take away the fact that Peter had revealed that he's Spider-Man and that he was married to Mary Jane. And it was like, it came down to basically like he made this deal with Mephisto to save his aunt who was shot or something like that. And Mephisto basically said, okay, since your aunt was shot by the fact that you revealed yourself, we're going to go back. We're going to erase that. But I also want to erase your marriage, too, because I'm an asshole like that.
What the fuck?
Oh, shit.
And so, and so that's how Spider-Man became.
That's the biggest.
Yeah, there's like this really good panel where Mephisto's like, I want your love. And so that's what he steals from it.
Oh,
and
man.
That's how they get rid of the Mary Jane, Peter Parker marriage.
Big ass cop out.
I mean, I kind of like it better with him not being married to MJ because it's more. It allows for more drama nowadays. True, you know, true. It's not like if he was just married, that would be, you know, kind of his story. Now he gets to date again. It's interesting.
So is he like is the Spider-Man like he is in the movies, just all whiny about MJ and MJ, I love you, MJ. Is that how he is in the comic books?
A lot of times. I mean, it's not as bad because, like, it's a more complex relationship in the comic books.
Okay.
Like, they both clearly want to be together, but there's so much preventing it. And, I mean, I don't want to, in case somebody decides to go pick up the Superior Spider-Man, which I think is a good book, I don't want to ruin it, but Doc Ock essentially dissects Peter and Mary Jane's relationship in a matter of an issue and brings it to a kind of resolution for the time being. So it's like I said, Doc Ock really taking care of Peter's life in a weird sort of way. Yeah, it's interesting though to see where it's going.
Well, I'm gonna be hitting you up from time to time to see what's going on with that.
Yeah, I only followed most of the Ultimate Spider-Man comic line, which was him being still in high school and, you know, becoming Spider-Man. New age Spider-Man. It was cool. I mean, it's been ongoing for I don't know how many years.
Didn't they kill off Peter in Ultimate?
Yeah, they did. That was weird. I mean,
I'm so lost.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many different stories.
I don't follow the Ultimate, but I know it's not Peter Parker on the cover because it's a little black kid.
Yeah, they have a black Spider-Man. They have a black Spider-Man.
What?
Yeah, they have a black Spider-Man. See, like I said, goes everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at, just alone, I was sitting there with Jacob and watching the Netflix, and there's like all sorts of different Spider-Man takes. Oh, yeah. I mean, there was this one techno one that I was like, what is this? But, you know, Doogie Howser does the voice, so you're like, cool.
Yeah, but
he does a lot of voices for DC stuff.
Yeah, he sure does.
He has a good voice.
Ben, where you at? You said you used to be a Marvel kid. Anything we missed about Spider-Man?
Maximum Carnage.
Oh, man. Who
remembers that?
I remember that, man. What was that, early 90s?
Yeah, it was 92, I think.
Yeah.
I just remember being into, like, because there were three titles always stood out. There was Amazing, Spectacular, and then just normal Spider-Man. And this storyline went across all three. And I think it was just 12 issues, wasn't it? It was 12.
Yeah, it was
a 12-part story.
Yeah, I think it was like a 12-issue run, yeah.
Yeah, oh, my God. It was fucking amazing. It was because it was so brutal when you had, like, Carnage and then you had Venom.
Yeah,
who couldn't really decide. And that's the thing, being like a Marvel kid, you know, I've still got, because I used to read Spider-Man all those years ago, I've still got a love for, like, if I see a Carnage comic or a Venom comic, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna look at that. I'll never buy them, but
have you seen the new Venom?
Is it any good?
I don't really like the direction it went in. A lot of people like the new Venom, but it's kind of a war book now.
Is it still Eddie Brock?
No, it's a different guy. Because the guy's paralyzed from the waist down, and he used to be a soldier, and they give him the Venom symbiote, mm-hmm. and they like send him out to do like missions and stuff like that. It just doesn't really appeal to me. I don't really like the war side of comics so much. But yeah, that's what the new Venom is. The new Venom's also in the Thunderbolts book too, with General Ross and Deadpool and Punisher and Elektra.
Oh, nice,
sweet.
So they're going all over the place now, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like if I wanted to follow a story like a while ago, I would have no problem just going to a shop and going, I'll have Amazing, 71 or Spectacular 13, because Spectacular started after Amazing, if I remember correctly.
But, yeah, well, I think Superior and Avenging are the only two Spider-Man centered comics nowadays. I mean, he's in the Avengers kinda, and or at least he was before the Marvel Now thing started. And I know he's like a member of Fantastic Four as well. But yeah, if you just follow like Superior Spider-Man, that storyline is pretty much good.
Yeah, that's the new story. That's the new storyline, right? Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah. Well, the Superior started when Doc Ock took over Peter Parker's body.
Oh, that's the one. Okay.
So, what's it like trying to find that first issue, that 700 issue?
It shouldn't be I'm sure they're probably still printing them.
Yeah. Yeah, I know we've seen them.
Nowadays they just print until they'll print months back and keep sending them as long as people are buying them.
I guess I should say how. You know, is it easy to find how much do they go for? $3.99 or something like that?
Yeah, it was standard $3.99.
Because we've seen them at the little con for like $30 or something like that.
What, the 700?
Yeah.
Well, it probably had to be like the first
first print.
The first print. Because first print's what they really look for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that means that it's sold out. Alternate cover. Yeah. Variant cover, yeah.
That too, when they're variant covers for only vendors. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, because variant covers, they only do one printing out, I think.
Yeah, that's it. And once they're done,
Yeah. So those are like $20 sometimes just when they come out. Like even, you know, before they even hit the shelves, they've already boosted the price.
I know, right? Like $13-$15. Like, what the hell, man? They're supposed to be normal price.
All right, guys. Well, that has been our review. Those have been our reviews. We dissected Spider-Man somewhat. If you guys know anything we missed out, hit us up on our Facebook page. And I want to take the time to thank Mr. John for joining us on our little podcast here.
Oh, no problem. Anytime, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, John.
Anytime you want to come on and talk comics, you're more than welcome.
Yeah, definitely.
Tell the folks where they could find you, if you don't mind them finding you.
You can find me on go to the Tours versus Zombies page, like that, and then listen to that podcast as well. That's where you can find me.
Right on.
Awesome podcast. Awesome. Absolutely amazing podcast.
Really funny. Really good.
I was telling John, I like hearing him piss off Torres. So funny.
And then John says,
"What are you saying? What are you saying?"
John's like, "It's not that hard."
And it's funny because John's like, more like, "Yeah, man, I'm just saying, you know, just say." You know, and Torres is like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah, sometimes I think he just pisses off himself. And he said it, and then he'll be like, "I'm mad about that," and then you know.
Cool.
Right on.
All right, you guys, any shout-outs, any whatevers?
Shout-outs? No, man, just to shout-outs to all the listeners and, you know, to the Fanny Pack of Justice. If you guys haven't listened to us, please do so. Me and Ivan and our friend Francisco do that show. We do it every week on Thursdays. You could find us on our Facebook page. And you could find us, the MCCC, at Mid-Condition Comic Connoisseurs on Facebook. You could leave us anything. Leave us messages. Leave us any suggestions you want us, any books you want us to read, anything you want us to review or talk about. We'll do it.
Yeah, hit us up on iTunes. You got iTunes. Give us a little comment, or what do they call it? Review.
Yeah.
Stitcher, give a little thumbs up, you know. Sarah?
Well, I'd like to thank the listeners for listening. Thanks so much for participating. And please make sure to leave us a comment, complaint, suggestion, dirty innuendo. Anything.
Oh, I got a... I don't know if you guys saw that. John and Ben, David Russell said you guys suck because you made him spend $140 on comics.
What comics was he buying for?
I think he was Sweet Tooth and what was the other one? Crossed? Yeah.
Oh, Sweet Tooth. I haven't actually started Crossed yet, but I'm so behind on everything all the time.
I still understand how you could spend so much money on comics. Like, I'm so in debt.
Don't get us started, man. Last week we went to the real quick. We went to the LA convention. No, it was not the LA convention. The Shrine Auditorium Comic Convention. And me and Ivan were trying to find the Death in the Family. We were trying to buy all the comics, and it was like each one was like $5, like $2 more than what its normal price was. And we were just buying all of them that we could find. I think we spent like $60.
Yeah, because then we went to Fat Collectibles and then we bought some more. And we bought another bunch. I'm still missing seven.
We wasted like $60 worth of comics. 60 plus?
That's because my girlfriend was
there.
No,
seriously, though, go check out the library, too. I don't know what other people's are like, but my library has a really good comics collection and trade paperback.
Dude, where do you live, man?
So, like, older stuff. I mean, I live out here on the East Coast, you know, out by Virginia Beach. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know what other places are like, but here we have a really nice library. It's got a nice comic collection.
We got it. You know where we probably got to go here? To that big-ass L.A. library, that one that looks like a... It was built in the 30s and shit.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it. It looks like a church.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Ben, any shout-outs?
Just you guys. And I want to say well done to Laura, who was part of the Academy of Zombie Survival. She just did her dissertation, and it went well. She was screwing there for a minute, but she's done well, and everyone's well happy with her. So I just want to say well done to her. If she's listening, she's probably not, but... she's so busy, she doesn't even... Like, I tell her stuff, and then the next day she'll ask me the same question. I told you that yesterday, Laura, but... Yeah, she's awesome. So, Laura, you guys, John, thanks for coming on, man. It's been a pleasure.
Anytime.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
So, when will we be back, Sarah?
We didn't discuss that, but hopefully...
Next month sometime.
Either next month or maybe in 2 weeks, but we're not sure yet.
We're still working on...
All right, well, we have been your MCCC hosts. I'm Ivan.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Eric.
And there's Ben.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.